This program has been described by AudioVision. For information on over 400 video and audio titles, call toll-free 1-866-966-7667 or visit our accessible website, www.audiovisioncanada.com. The contents of this program are protected by copyright and may not be duplicated or used for any commercial purpose without the express written consent of the copyright holders.
A man steps to the top of the stairs in a 19th-century French house. Tying the belt on his smoking jacket, he slowly begins to descend. He pauses to listen beside a portrait of a middle-aged matron. Then, cautiously, he continues down the stairs. Reaching the bottom, he nervously approaches a door off the hallway and goes in. Limping slightly, he walks through a lounge toward a grand piano. As he nears the piano, he stares at the floor beneath it. Suddenly, the metronome on it starts. In a panic, he dashes it to the floor and covers his ears.
Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
He collapses across the piano. Recovering, he drags himself to the side of the piano and goes down on his knees. Underneath, the metronome lies on a carpet that rises and falls to the beat. Slapping the metronome away, he places a trembling hand on the throbbing carpet. Terror-stricken, he lurches away. The Telltale Heart. Starring Lawrence Payne, Adrian Corey, Dermot Walsh. With Selma Vastias, John Scott, John Martin, Pamela Plant, Annette Carroll, Graham Ashley, David Lander. Based on a story by Edgar Allan Poe. Music by Tony Crombie and Bill Lesage. Production supervisor, Brian Taylor. Director of photography, Jimmy Wilson. Art director, Peter Russell. Editor, Derek Parsons. Production manager, John Draper. Recording supervisor, W.A. Howell. Sound editor, John Smith. Continuity, Phyllis Townsend. Wardrobe, Rennie Gerald Koch. Produced by the Danzigers. Edward J. Danziger, Harry Lee Danziger. Directed by Ernest Morris. Late in the evening, a horse-drawn cab drives along Rue Morgue. In a book-cluttered bedroom overlooking the street, the man wakes from his terrible nightmare. The housekeeper and a man in evening clothes enter the room.
Yes. Yes, I'm all right.
Concerned, the man walks around the bed.
Edgar. Oh, God.
Edgar clutches him.
Come, please. In the drawer, please. Please.
Carl goes to the dresser and takes a vial of white powder from a jewelry case. Opening the vial, he goes back to Edgar. He pours some on Edgar's wrist. Edgar sniffs it desperately.
No. No. Please let me have it.
Edgar, why won't you let me send for a doctor?
No. I'm all right. All right.
The drugs begin to take effect.
If there's anything you need.
Yes. Yes, I'll send for you.
Carl and the housekeeper leave the room. Edgar struggles from the bed and goes to his writing desk. Dropping into the chair, he covers his face with a hand, then looks at his writing sheets. Sipping a drink, a young prostitute sits at the bar in a crowded tavern. Edgar passes by outside. He stops and begins to stare at the young prostitute's legs through the window. An older prostitute distracts him. He brushes her off and enters the tavern. He walks through the crowded room to the bar beside the young woman.
I'll get you. A beer.
As the woman applies makeup, she notices Edgar gazing at her legs. She touches up her lips as he continues looking at her. When she looks directly at him, he quickly looks away. Smiling, she leans forward.
Would you like to buy me a drink? Small cognac for a nice girl.
As he pays for his drink, she touches his hand.
My name's Elsie.
When he shrugs her off, she's hurt. Then...
Would you like to dance?
Edgar ignores her.
Oh, shy. Is that it?
Avoiding her, he stumbles off the bar stool. He faces her for a moment and then runs out of the tavern. Out in the dark street, Edgar runs to his front door. Inside, he limps to the stairs and starts up. Pausing in front of the portrait, he gently strokes the woman's face with the back of his hand and then continues up the stairs. Inside his bedroom, he lights a table lamp. Taking off his jacket, he walks dejectedly to the bed and leans for a moment on the brass end rails. Then, walking over to an armoire full of books and papers, he reaches in and pulls out a leather folder. He leafs through the contents. He sits down at a reading table and begins looking at pictures of naked women. rocking slightly in the chair. Edgar dozes off. The next morning, the housekeeper opens the front windows of the house. While up in his bedroom, Edgar washes up. Looking into the street, he sees a cab drop off an attractive young woman. As he watches, she instructs two workmen to move her trunk into a house directly across the street. Moments later, Edgar observes them entering a bedroom opposite his window. The young woman pays the workmen, and they leave. Later that evening, the young woman combs out her hair at her window. Edgar notices her as he leafs through his erotic pictures. Getting up, he goes to his window. From behind the curtains, he watches her intently. For bed, Edgar cannot take his eyes off her. The next day,
good morning, Mr. Fowler.
The young woman greets her landlady as she heads off down the street. Edgar hurries out of his house. He looks after her as he crosses the street. He turns to the landlady.
Good morning.
Good morning, Miss Marsh.
I see you have someone new in the house.
Miss Clare. Moved in yesterday. Seems like a nice lady.
Miss Clare?
That's right. Miss Betty Clare. You know her?
No. She works near here, does she?
The florist, down near the square.
Thank you. Good morning.
Outside the florist, Edgar watches as Betty serves a customer. When she's finished, he walks up behind her, removing his hat. Sensing him, she turns.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
What was it you had in mind? A bunch of roses, perhaps. Or a buttonhole.
Yes, a buttonhole.
When she reaches for a flower, he quickly leaves. Puzzled, she turns to an approaching customer.
Can I help you, sir? A buttonhole, perhaps.
That night, Edgar dozes in his rocking chair. The light from Betty's bedroom wakes him. Rising, he quickly goes to the window and sees Betty getting ready for bed. Edgar watches as she undresses to her corset. Stepping out of her petticoats, she sits on the bed and begins to take off her stockings. Totally engrossed, Edgar starts to perspire. The next day.
But how do you get to know a girl?
How do you get to know a girl? Why, it's the easiest thing in the world.
How?
You've got somebody in mind.
How? Tell me how.
Well, it's hard to say. It depends on the girl, the place, so many things.
Suppose...
Carl regards Edgar with amusement.
Suppose she lived just across the street, but you'd never met her.
Oh, that's easy. You wait for her to appear, you step forward, you raise your hat, and you say, how do you do?
For no reason?
Well, if she lives across the street, she's a neighbor. One talks to one's neighbors.
Yes, yes, I suppose so. But what would you say?
Well, either small talk, such as what a pleasant day it's been, that sort of thing, or the direct approach. Come right out in the open. Tell her you think she's attractive and you want her to dine with you.
You make it sound so easy.
But it is easy, Edgar. Look here, what is all this? Are you thinking of finding yourself a girl?
Suppose she rebuffs you. Slaps your face right out there in the street.
Oh, yes, that's a risk. But it's one usually worth taking.
With a smile, Carl finishes his brandy. The next morning, Betty leaves for work down the busy street. A moment later, Edgar comes out and runs after her. Rounding a corner, he catches up with her.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Marsh. I live just across the street from you. We're neighbors.
Well, I have to go to work, Mr. Marsh. Good morning.
Taken aback for a moment, Edgar goes after her.
I'm walking this way. I wonder if you'd mind.
Didn't I see you at the flower shop yesterday?
Yes.
Of course I don't mind, Mr. Marsh.
Thank you. Oh, may I?
I'm not very heavy.
Please.
He takes her parasol and gloves. Arriving at the shop, Edgar gives Betty her things.
Thank you.
Just a moment. May I see you again?
We're neighbors.
No, I meant perhaps we could meet for dinner sometime.
Yes, I'd like that.
Tonight. How about tonight?
I work late.
I can meet you here. I thought perhaps we could go to that little restaurant on the square.
Very well. A date.
Thank you.
Betty walks into the shop. That evening, at the restaurant...
And my mother died. After that, I thought I'd take a chance and move into the city. I was very lucky, too. I got work in the florist the day after I arrived. But I've been doing all the talking.
And I'm listening to you.
Now it's your turn.
Well, I work as a librarian. I'm in charge of the reference section at the main library.
Is that all?
Can't think of anything else to say.
Well, what do you do with your spare time?
Oh, well, I play chess mostly. Carl Loomis and I. Carl's a friend of mine. You'd like him. Everybody likes Carl.
Who else lives in your house?
No one.
You live alone? In that big old house? Surely not.
I prefer it that way.
Would you like to dance?
No, I'd sooner not.
I don't mind if
it's... It's getting a bit late. I think I ought to take you home.
Yes.
They gather their belongings and leave. Edgar hands Betty down from a cab and goes to pay the driver.
Thank you. Good night.
They walk toward her door together.
Good night, Edgar. It's been a lovely evening.
The stairway is very dark. May I see you at your door?
Thank you.
They go in.
and Edgar follows her up the stairs.
Dear, landlady doesn't believe in wasting light. She turns them all out at 10:30. Thank you, Edgar. I think I'll be safe now.
Betty.
He tries to kiss her, but she pushes him away. Alarmed, she rushes into her room.
Betty, I'm sorry.
The next evening, Edgar waits outside the flower shop. Betty comes out with the owner to take plants inside.
Can I help you, madame?
I think you can go now, Betty.
Oh, thank you, madame.
Noticing Edgar, she goes back inside. Moments later, she reappears and walks past Edgar without looking at him.
Betty, you must forgive me for last night. Please let me see you again. If only just for one drink together. I'm sorry, Betty.
Well, perhaps one drink then.
Later, they walk back to Betty's door.
Good night, Edgar.
Are you doing anything tomorrow night? I was wondering whether we could do something rather special. Well, it's Saturday night. You wouldn't have to go to work the following day. Perhaps we could have dinner somewhere, or go somewhere and dance together. Or have you some other engagement?
I'll come with you, Edgar.
Pleased with himself, Edgar crosses the street to his own door. The following evening, a dance band plays in an expensive restaurant. Edgar smiles happily, while Betty, polite and remote, avoids looking at him.
You're the prettiest girl here. Everybody's admiring you. I've been here quite often, always on my own.
It's all so crowded. Do you think we could have a drink?
Oh, yes, of course.
They return to their table.
Waiter, what shall we have? Champagne. How about champagne?
Well,
waiter, champagne, the best you have. We must come here again. Saturday, perhaps. How about next Saturday?
Well, on Saturday, I think
so many things I want to enjoy with you. I never realized how wonderful it is to share something.
Betty is uncomfortable when Edgar reaches for her hands. A dinner party enters the restaurant.
It's Carl. You remember, I told you about him. Carl?
Yes, our table's over
there. Over here.
Oh, pardon me a moment. I'll be right back.
Don't be too long.
Hey, Carl, I didn't expect to see you here.
Carl, I want you to meet a great friend of mine, Betty Clare. Carl Loomis. I've told her so much about you.
Good evening.
I'd look forward to meeting you, Mr. Loomis.
Carl, he's my best friend.
That's right. I'm his best friend.
Oh, this is wonderful. I've just ordered some champagne. You will stay and have a drink.
I'm sorry, Edgar. I'm with people.
Well, bring them over.
Well, there's too many of them, and they're a little drunk.
Oh, it's ridiculous. You can't just go like that. Just a few minutes. One drink.
Yes, please do, Carl.
Well, that settles it. He's never been known to refuse a lady.
Very well. One drink.
Wonderful.
Removing his evening cape, Carl sits down. As the waiter brings the wine, Betty cannot take her eyes off Carl. A few drinks later...
But that was when I was halfway across the Americas. I've settled down since then. A first-class Rolling Stone to a second-rate scientist. I've got an awful lot to catch up on.
But don't you miss the excitement?
A little. But it wasn't all adventure, you know. Hard work most of the time.
Same, I wish I'd done it.
And me, too.
Well, you could, Edgar. There's nothing to keep you here now. It's easy to wander when you've got nowhere to come back to. Well, I must be getting back to my party. Oh, no, not yet, surely.
I thought you might ask me to dance, Carl.
Yes, do, Carl. Dance with Betty. Go on. Go on, Carl.
Very well.
Enjoying the moment, Edgar drinks and smokes as he watches them dance.
Very strange that you and Edgar are such good friends.
Well, quite strange.
We're so different.
Edgar is a decent sort. He's helped me out of a spot more than once.
I like this place.
There are better places.
I haven't been in town long enough to know them. Not more than a week.
Yes. So Edgar said.
I've been working too hard to get around much. I work in the florist on the square.
They return to the table.
Thank you.
And another drink, Carl.
Oh, no, thank you, Edgar. Really, I must get back to my party now. Good night, Miss Fair. Good night, Edgar.
Good night, Carl. Same time tomorrow?
Yes.
Well, what did you think of him?
I like him very much.
I knew you would. Everybody likes Carl. Have some more champagne.
What did you mean, same time tomorrow?
Oh, well, we always spend Sunday together. He comes to lunch and then we play chess. Oh, Betty, you look beautiful. Really beautiful.
What shall we drink to?
You propose a toast.
To a successful evening.
Successful evening.
The next day, Carl and Edgar play chess in the lounge.
That's it, I'm afraid. Now your queen's gone, two more moves and checkmate. Another?
No, thank you. Two beatings are quite enough for me.
You haven't said a word about last night yet.
Carl lights a cigar.
Don't you think she's beautiful, Carl?
She's very attractive.
She's so easy to talk to be with. You know what I'm like usually with women, petrified lest I should do the wrong thing, but it's not like that with Betty. I feel I can relax with her.
Don't let your heart run away with you, Edgar. Well, what I mean is, it would be foolish to get in too deep with this girl.
Why?
Well, she's new in town. She's anxious to make friends.
Well, that's lucky for me, isn't it?
She's also your first real girlfriend. The first one always goes to a man's head.
No.
There'll be other girls. You'll see.
Not for me.
Just be sure, Edgar, that's all. Don't build your hopes too high.
We have the same interests. Did I tell you? I lent her a copy of Ovid, and her reactions were exactly the same as mine. Now, that's rare in a woman, isn't it? I mean, a woman as gay and lovely as Betty.
Excuse me, sir. There's a young lady to see you. A Miss Clare.
Betty. Show her in.
Edgar quickly clears up some papers as Betty walks in.
Betty.
Edgar, Carl, I didn't mean to disturb you, but I wanted to return your book. I remembered how cautious you were about letting it out of your sight.
Thank you.
Well, I suppose I better go.
Well, now that you're here, won't you stay and have a drink?
No, I didn't mean to intrude on your game.
Oh, nonsense. We've just finished, haven't we, Carl?
Yes, we've just finished.
Are you sure?
I wouldn't dream of letting you go now. Please.
Well, in that case...
Soon after, Carl plays piano.
Oh, I was going to show you the line sketchings by Mirov. There are over 50 of them, you see.
Oh, that you're playing. It's very pretty.
Oh, he's only teasing you. He can play much better than that. How about you, Carl? What about that piece from Smutya?
When Carl reaches for his brandy, Betty covers his hand with hers. Carl gives his friend a concerned look, but Edgar is oblivious. plays. Betty is carried away by the music. Carl smiles slightly when he notices.
Splendid.
Well, I must go home. I've got some reading to catch up on.
And I must get up early. Thank you, Edgar. It's been a perfect evening.
It was perfect for me, too.
I'll see you, Edgar.
When? Well, how about tomorrow evening? I'm free.
Well, Betty and I were already going out to dinner.
Why don't you join us, Carl?
Oh, no. Thank you.
That's an excellent idea.
Well, no.
Well, you already said you were free. You know you don't like spending your evenings alone.
Oh, I'll find something to do.
Well, why bother when we're going anyway?
Very well. Tomorrow, then.
They walk out to the hallway together.
I'll see you home.
Oh, no, Edgar, it's much too late. Besides, I only live across the street. I'm sure Carl will see me to my door. Good night, Edgar.
Good night.
Goodbye, Edgar.
Goodbye, Carl.
Carl takes Betty's arm, and they walk across the street. At her door, Betty stops expectantly. Carl tips his hat.
Good night.
And leaves. Betty looks after him wistfully. At a jeweler's.
That one.
This one, sir?
Yes.
That's easy to arrange. I'll have it mounted for you.
How long will it take?
Well, give me till tomorrow.
Fine.
Excuse me, sir. I would prefer something in advance, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Shall we deliver it for you?
No. I'll pick it up in the morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Edgar leaves as other customers arrive.
Can I help you?
That evening at the restaurant, the dance floor is crowded. As Betty stares at Carl, Edgar orders wine.
The very best you have.
Yes, sir. Something else to celebrate, Edgar?
Perhaps.
Betty? Edgar invites Betty to dance. Getting up, she gives Carl a yearning look.
Very much.
As they dance, Betty ignores Edgar and keeps looking at Carl. As Carl watches them dance, a young woman comes up to him.
Carl, darling, all alone.
With me, Jane.
Intensely aware that Betty is watching, Carl quickly brushes her off. Carl and Betty continue to gaze at each other as Edgar whirls her around the dance floor. Carl is completely enthralled. Later, the waiter brings another bottle of wine.
Two of the finest people I know. The finest. And one of the finest evenings.
As Edgar pours more wine, Carl and Betty are tense.
Conapa sicunim. Il forte me sicura. Montaigne. A fine writer for a fine evening.
It's late, Edgar. I said it's late. I'd like to go.
Oh yes, certainly. I'll
go and get our coats.
When he leaves, Betty looks at Carl.
You haven't asked me to dance all evening, Carl.
She stands, and Carl cannot help but follow. On the dance floor, Carl takes her in his arms. dance, they move closer together. Soon they're dancing cheek to cheek. Overcome, they kiss and embrace eagerly. At the coat check, Edgar gathers up their evening coats. Betty interrupts another kiss when she notices him.
I do.
Leaving Carl, she walks over to Edgar, and he helps her on with her cape. Giving Carl a last look, she leaves the restaurant with Edgar following behind. Edgar and Betty arrive at her door.
Betty, since that last time, I haven't...
He lunges at her, but she pushes him away.
Betty.
No. It's late. I'm really tired.
Yes, of course. I'm sorry.
She gives him a kiss on the cheek.
Good night, Edgar.
Discouraged, Edgar walks away. In her darkened bedroom, Betty starts removing her clothes. Edgar watches her undress from his window. Someone comes in behind her. Carl takes her in his arms, and they embrace. Troubled, Edgar moves closer to the window. Betty leads Carl to her bed, where they kiss passionately. Devastated, Edgar keeps watching. Later, a cart passes in the street below. In Betty's room, Carl sits on the edge of the bed, getting dressed.
I'd better go. I mustn't be seen here by anybody.
Is it Edgar you're worried about?
Yes, I'm worried about Edgar.
Betty holds him.
You said you love me, Carl.
I do, Betty.
They kiss.
No other woman's ever had this effect on me. I do love you.
And why worry about Edgar?
Why did you go out with him?
Well, no. It's a stranger here. I don't know anyone. I suppose I felt sorry for him.
Well, that's just it. He's to be pitied. So he invites pity.
They fall back on the bed.
Doesn't own me, Carl.
Nobody wants to. To a man like Edgar, it's all that matters.
They kiss again.
You mean a great deal to him, Betty.
And to you?
And again.
What do you suggest?
I'll break it to him gently. I'll tell him that we've fallen in love, that we're going to get married. He's an intelligent man. He'll understand. He's got to understand.
He kisses her once more. The next evening, as a storm rages outside, Mrs. Vine lets Carl in.
I couldn't get here any sooner. What's the matter with him, Mrs. Vine?
Yes, sir. He hasn't left his room. He asked me to send for you and wait to let you in. He's upstairs.
Has he sent for a doctor?
Wouldn't let me.
All right, you can go now. Thank you, Mrs. Vine. You've waited late enough as it is.
I'm staying, sir. Do you think there's anything I can do?
No, thank you. I can take care of things. You know, I've never been upstairs in this house before. Which is his room?
It's on top of the stairs, sir.
Thank you very much.
Carl climbs the stairs.
Edgar?
Sitting in his chair, Edgar stares out the window.
The door is unlocked.
Edgar, what's wrong?
Come in, Carl. Come in.
What's the matter? Are you sick?
Sick? Yes, kind of sickness.
Yes, well, I don't wonder, sitting here with no fire, no light on. How soon is this place looking a bit more cheerful?
No. No lights.
Edgar, you've got to pull yourself out of this.
Pour me a drink, will you? On the table by the window.
You must get out of here. Sitting in one room all the time isn't doing you any good.
I like this room. Serene and tranquil. And the view is to be admired.
Carl glances out the window and sees Betty in her bed. Suddenly afraid, he turns to see Edgar standing over him, a fire poker in his hand.
Carl, I know.
Edgar strikes him down. Carl tries desperately to crawl away, grabbing at a tablecloth and knocking over a chair. He drags himself up the foot of the brass bed as Edgar relentlessly slashes him. Carl collapses onto the floor, where Edgar continues beating him with a fierce intensity. Finally, it's over. Edgar emerges from his room shaken and covered in blood. Turning off the stair lamp, he goes back into the room. He backs out, dragging Carl's body, and starts down the stairs. Partway down, he pauses to rest. As he starts again, he slips on the stairs and the body tumbles past him to the bottom. Dragging himself up by the handrail, he makes his way to the bottom. Shoulders. He drags it across the hallway and into the lounge. Some days later, at the police station.
But Carl wouldn't go away, not just like that, not without telling me.
If you will pardon me, Miss Clare, that may have been exactly the idea.
What do you mean?
We checked at Mr. Loomis' apartment. He is well known to his landlady, and indeed the whole district, as a rather wild young man sowing plenty of wild oats.
Carl wouldn't do this to me. Something's happened to him. An accident.
We checked the hospitals, too. I shouldn't worry too much. It isn't the first time it's happened. Twice before, Mr. Loomis has been away on a discreet holiday to escape an unhappy gambling debt. Another time, a woman.
Betty stands.
And you won't do anything?
There is nothing I can do. If, however, you bring me further information, something more definite.
He opens the door, and Betty sweeps out.
Mr. Marsh.
Edgar is at work when Betty is brought in.
Betty.
Have you heard anything?
No.
I've just come from the police station.
What did they say?
The same as you. That Carl has gone away like this before.
You're showing a great deal of concern for him.
I don't like to think that anything's happened to him. It's been 3 days now, Edgar. Are you sure he said nothing to you?
Carl didn't confide in me completely, you know.
He can look after himself.
Betty closes her eyes briefly. Confidently, Edgar puts a finger on her chin.
I'll see you tonight. We can walk home together?
She nods, reluctantly. Later that evening, they arrive back at Betty's door.
There's a circus in town. I wonder whether perhaps later on...
Not tonight, Edgar. I'm very tired. Perhaps another time.
All right. Some other time.
Good night.
Take all the time you want.
Soon after, Edgar sits in his rocking chair.
I can be patient now. Soon, she must come to me. She must come to me.
He dozes off. As he sleeps, he is tormented by images of Carl's murder. He wakes up in a panic. Plagued with guilt, he covers his face with his hands. He gradually becomes aware of the sound, which seems to come from somewhere down below. The next morning, Mrs. Vine dusts the hallway and goes to the lounge door. Edgar comes out of his room.
Mrs. Vine!
What are you doing?
I'm trying to clean the lounge, sir, but the door's stuck.
It's locked. You were right when you said that this house was far too big for just one person, so I decided to dispense with some of the rooms. That door will remain locked.
But I ought at least to dust
it,
sir.
I said it would remain locked.
As you say, sir. Are you all right, sir? The other evening when Mr. Loomis arrived...
I should never have troubled him. I was all right. He only stayed for a few moments.
After he leaves, Mrs. Vine looks worried. That night, Edgar's sleep is troubled. He wakes. Sitting up, he locates the sound. Gets out of bed, crosses the room, and stops the pendulum with his hand. He leans on the end of the bed. Reacting to another sound, he heads toward the bathroom, pulling on his dressing gown. Inside, he looks around anxiously and sees the dripping tap. He steps over and tightens the handle. After hesitating for a moment, he goes out. Returning from a late night outing, Edgar is surprised to find himself on his street. He walks to his door, then goes in. From her window, Betty watches him. Then, with a thoughtful expression, she goes to her bed. Inside, Edgar hangs up his hat. He glances at the lounge door. Then he wearily climbs the stairs. His jacket and hangs it on the end of the bed. Putting on his smoking jacket, he glances out the window. As he walks over to a table and opens a bottle of wine. Cupping the glass in his hands, he quickly drains it. Suddenly aware of the sound, he stops and listens. He puts down his glass and hurries to the bathroom and rushes to the sink. The tap is not dripping. Out on the landing, Edgar slowly descends the stairs. He stops beside the portrait, listening. Then he cautiously continues down the stairs. Reaching the bottom, he warily approaches the lounge door. Inside, lamp ornaments rattle on a table. Edgar backs out in a panic. Above him, the ceiling lamp sways back and forth. He runs into the study and leans back against the door in anguish. Glancing over, he sees a seashell rocking on a side table. Terrified, Edgar circles about the room in fear and confusion. China decoration begins wobbling. When he moves toward it, it stops. Another noise rivets his attention. Walking forward, he stares in disbelief at the chessboard where the Black King rolls back and forth. He stops it. But when he removes his hand, it continues to rock. Overcome with terror, Edgar backs away and runs from the room. Out in the hallway, he collapses against the stair post. As if in a trance, he walks into the lounge and makes his way carefully through the room toward the grand piano. As he gets near the piano, he stares at the floor beneath it. Suddenly, the metronome on it starts. In a panic, he dashes it to the floor and clutches his head.
Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
He collapses across the piano. Recovering, he drags himself to the side of the piano and goes down on his knees. The metronome lies on the carpet that rises and falls to the beat. Slapping the metronome away, he places a trembling hand on the throbbing carpet. In desperation, he rushes from the room, through the hallway, and into the kitchen. From a knife rack, he grabs a large carving knife, then rushes back through the house and into the lounge. Lunging at the floor under the piano, he drags the carpet aside. And begins frantically tearing up the floorboards. Cloth, he reveals Carl's body. Terrified and covered in sweat, Edgar rips open the corpse's shirt. Steeling himself, he holds a knife in both hands and plunges it into the chest of the corpse. Desperately, he begins cutting away. Finally, he's done, and he puts the knife aside. Reaching down, he pulls out the beating heart in his bloody hands. Horrified, Edgar staggers away with his grisly burden. Out in the back garden, he claws open the lawn turf. He thrusts the heart in the ground and covers it up. Then he limps away. He returns to his bedroom and goes to the table lamp. He struggles to light it. Hands covered in blood, he staggers to the wash basin. He dries his hands. Then reaches for the wine bottle. Drinking too quickly, he collapses onto the wash basin. Betty is awakened by the noise. She gets out of bed and walks to her window. Across the street, she sees Edgar retching into the wash basin. The next day.
Why, yes, Monday evening. Mr. Marsh wasn't very well that night. In fact, he hasn't really been himself for some days now.
He asked you to take a note to Mr. Loomis?
Yes.
Do you know what was in the note?
I'm not in the habit of reading other people's letters. I think it was to ask him to come here straight away. Anyway, Mr. Loomis did arrive that evening.
Mr. Loomis was here? On Monday night?
Yes. Now, look, miss, I shouldn't be telling you all this, only you said you wanted to help Mr. Marsh.
Yes, I think he's a very sick man. I do want to help him.
Betty starts to leave, then takes the housekeeper's hands.
Please, Mrs. Vine, don't tell him I was here. Not yet.
Very well, miss.
At the police station.
My dear Miss Clare, your accusations are entirely without foundation.
But Carl Loomis went to Edgar Marsh's house that evening.
What if he did?
Why hasn't Edgar said anything to me about it?
Perhaps he wanted to spare your feelings. We spoke to Mr. Marsh, you know. He has known Loomis for years. He's got him out of many a scrape in the past. It's possible that Loomis went there to borrow money. Marsh hasn't mentioned it because, well, one doesn't mention that kind of thing.
You don't know Edgar Marsh. He could be insanely jealous. His mind could be twisted.
Edgar Marsh has worked quietly as chief librarian in this town for many years. A thoroughly respectable citizen. No, 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 Miss Clare.
You don't want to find Carl Loomis, do you?
I don't want to persecute an innocent man.
Frustrated, Betty gets up and leaves.
Some women never want to admit they've been thrown over. Not even to themselves.
Do you think there might be something in what she says?
Do you?
Later, Betty paces in her room as she keeps an eye on Edgar's front door. Seeing him leave, she hurries out. In the street, she checks to see that Edgar is well away, then runs across to his door. It's locked. Gathering up her long dress, she hastens around the side. Moments later, she reappears through the kitchen. She enters the study. Then begins searching through papers. She goes to the writing desk. Meanwhile, Edgar stops in front of an outdoor cafe. He walks in. then sits at a table.
Yes, sir?
Cognac. Right, sir. And some cigars.
Yes.
Betty continues her search in the lounge. Seeing the metronome on the floor, she picks it up and examines it. Then she goes to the piano. Running a hand along the top for a moment, she looks around the room. At the cafe, Edgar finishes his drink. Taking out his wallet, he puts money on the table and gets up. Remembering the book he was reading, he puts it in his pocket as he goes out. Betty enters Edgar's bedroom. Edgar walks back along the street. Noticing the armoire, Betty walks over to it. As she begins searching, something falls onto the floor. She stops and kneels to pick it up. It's the badly bent poker. She stands, examining it. Edgar returns to Rue Morgue. Taking the poker, Betty quickly leaves the room. Edgar arrives at his front door as Betty starts down the stairs. Seeing him at the door, she runs back across the landing and hides behind some drapes as he comes in. She shrinks against the wall as Edgar begins to mount the stairs. But he changes his mind and goes toward the kitchen. Betty glides down the stairs. She slips quietly out the front door as Edgar comes out of the kitchen with a bottle of wine. Entering the study, he limps despondently across the room. And drops onto the sofa. Noticing the chessboard, clutches the bottle to his chest in despair.
It is just an ordinary poker.
Then why hide it in his bedroom where there's no fire? Why hide it?
Now look here, miss. There may be a dozen explanations.
I demand that you search that house.
Oh, I can't do that. Not without the inspector's authority.
Then find him.
He's out on a case just now. I'll tell you what I will do, though. I'll make sure he sees this as soon as he gets back.
Edgar plays chess by himself.
Bishop moves. Checkmate. King moves. Checkmate. Try again.
Increasingly disturbed, he takes another drink. Out in the garden, the lawn begins to heave.
no good. I can't win. Checkmate.
Sweeping the chess pieces to the floor, he buries his head on the board. Lifting his head, he glares into space.
No.
He lurches into the lounge. Petrified, he forces himself toward the piano. Pulling back the carpet, he tears at the floorboards. The corpse is exposed, its healed chest pulsing. At the police station.
There's no convincing that woman.
I told her you'd contact her as soon as you got back, sir.
Morning will be soon enough. Here, put this away somewhere.
He picks up the poker.
Wait a minute.
He examines it closely.
Here?
The inspector picks up a pen and scrapes the poker.
Dried blood.
Patrons leave the local tavern as it closes for the night. Edgar rushes up to the door.
We're closed.
Distraught, he stumbles away. He brushes off a prostitute and keeps going. In a nearby park, exhausted from guilt and anguish, he collapses on a bench. Eventually, he falls asleep. Early the next morning, a lamplighter extinguishes the gas lamp on Rue Morgue. The police inspector and Betty sit in her room while the sergeant watches out the window.
Any sign?
Street's empty, sir.
I don't see why you're waiting. Why don't you just break in and search the house?
That's not the way we do things, Miss Clare. Suspicion's one thing, evidence is another. You need evidence to break into a man's home. Mr. Marsh will come back. And then we'll ask him some questions.
And if he doesn't come back, what then?
We can talk about that later.
Later.
In the street, Edgar hobbles toward his door. Betty comes out her door and walks across the street to intercept him. Noticing her, he goes to her.
Betty. Good morning, Mr. Marsh. Well, you look as though you had rather a rough night.
I've been... Betty,
I know it's very early to call, Mr. Marsh, but I'd like to ask you a few questions, if you don't mind. Shall we go inside?
Inside?
That's right, sir. We don't want to stand out here, do we?
Resigned, Edgar heads to his door. In the hallway.
Well, sir, where shall we go? In here?
No. In here. In the study.
You sit down, sir.
I'll stand if you don't mind, but you sit down.
Edgar, we want to know about Carl.
Just a matter of routine, sir. You see, there is a possibility that our first ideas about the disappearance of Mr. Loomis may well have been inaccurate. You see, you neglected to tell us that he was here that Monday evening. Indeed, there's information to suggest that you asked him to come here, sent for him, in fact. Now, is that true, sir?
I was sick. I asked him to come.
For any particular reason, sir?
I wanted him to bring some things, some personal things.
How long was Mr. Loomis here that evening, sir?
Distracted by the sound, Edgar has difficulty concentrating.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear that.
I said, how long was Mr. Loomis here that evening?
I don't know, I...
Come now, Mr. Marsh, you must be able to hazard a guess. How long was Mr. Loomis here that evening?
Ten minutes. 10 minutes.
Did anyone see him leave here?
I don't know. I don't know.
Now, just one or two more routine questions. What did you and Mr. Loomis talk about that evening?
Clutching his head, he becomes increasingly disturbed.
Come now, you must remember what you spoke about. Mr. Marsh, I insist that you answer my question. Mr. Marsh!
Edgar jumps up.
You know, don't you? You know! You can hear it, can't you? You can hear it!
Hear what?
The beating of his heart! The beating of his infernal heart!
He presses his fists against his temples.
He's buried in there. But his heart keeps beating. I can't stop his heart from beating. I can't stop his heart from beating.
With the beating stopped, Edgar regains his wits. Realizing what he has said, he bolts from the room. He runs to the front door, sees a policeman outside, and then leaps up the stairs with a sergeant in pursuit. With a demented grin, he throws a vase at the advancing police. The inspector pulls his revolver. Wounded, Edgar topples over the banister and is impaled on a spear. Edgar Allan Poe awakens from another nightmare.
Oh, Edgar!
Carl! Oh, Carl.
Are you all right? You've been screaming loud enough to bring the house down.
Yes, I'm all right now. I had a nightmare. A terrible nightmare.
Can I get you something?
No, I'm fine now.
He looks at his writing.
Oh, must have been quite a nightmare.
Yes. Yes, it was.
He rises from his chair.
You were there, Carl.
Oh?
And I was in it, too, except that I had a limp.
He walks toward the window.
And there was a...
He looks out and sees a cab pull up across the street. The cab pulls away to reveal an attractive young woman who looks like Betty. Shocked, Edgar whirls around. Taking a few steps, he breaks out in a cold sweat. He looks about the room with a dazed expression. Then he stares down at the chessboard with the fallen kings. The end. This described version of The Telltale Heart was created by AudioVision Canada. The narrative description was written by John Sharkey, narrated by Elva May Hoover, and produced by Marco Sorin and Valerie Hunter. For information on other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from AudioVision Canada, Call toll-free 1-800-567-6755. Cast: Edgar, Lawrence Payne, Betty, Adrian Corey, Carl, Dermot Walsh, Mrs. Vine, Selma Vastias, Inspector, John Scott, Police Sergeant, John Martin, Landlady, Annette Carroll, Jeweler, David Lander, Jackie, Rosemary Rotheray, Dorothy, Suzanne Fuller. A Brigadier Film Associates Incorporated release.